Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We got a great show today, and we are talking once again to Kate Grace about her wonderful, powerful book that was at the library a few weeks ago, talking about collateral damage. And one of the nice things about this lecture series that we're doing from the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance, not that we, because I'm with the radio station, but that the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance is doing and Hope for Life is doing, is that we're trying to record these. So you can go to the YouTube channel, which is through Ardent Counseling Center. Ardent is A-R-D-E-N-T, Ardent Counseling Center, and you could just type in Ardent Counseling Center on YouTube. Or you could go to the Ardent Counseling website, which is ardentcenter.com. Sorry to make it confusing for you. Or you could just email me, scott@ardentcenter.com. Or you could do KRUU for some of these other archives of this show. But to get a copy of this fantastic lecture that if you didn't see it, you really should. And even if you did, you might want to hear it again because there was some amazing stories. Anyways, you're listening to KRUU 100.1 on your FM dial, archived everywhere, as I said. You can email me, scott@ardentcenter.com. Love to hear from everybody out there, which we often do. And really excited to talk to Kate again, who's actually in town because she had just done this talk. And we're going to go through a couple of the questions that didn't get answered at this show. But first, Kate's going to tell us a little bit about what she's talking about her book and what she's been doing, that if people are interested, you could certainly check that out. And Kate will tell you how to get a hold of her. But she actually so incredibly generously donated two books to the MUM library. So you could, and you don't have to be a student, you don't have to be from campus, you don't have to be a meditator, you don't have to be anything. You're welcome to go to the library and check out those books. All right, enough of the intro. This is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry, and Kate, take it away.
Thank you, Scott. A little bit about my book. I wrote a book called Collateral Damage, The Impacts of My Mother's Mental Illness on Me. I wrote the book because I had a very difficult childhood because of my mother's severe mental illness. And as an adult, I couldn't find anything to help me through that, the trauma and the drama of what had happened to me as a child. So the writer Toni Morrison once said, if you can't find a book you want to read, then you must write it. So that's what I did. You can contact me via email at kategrace2@gmail.com. So it's kategrace2@gmail.com.
Number two,
yeah.
Okay.
And also there's a Facebook page, Kate Grace. So if you want to reach out, please feel free to do so.
Yeah. I mean, even if they've got a question, they don't have money, don't want to buy the book, whatever, they're welcome to reach out to you.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
Or you could always contact me, scott@ardentcenter.com, and I could always send Kate an email.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us about what happened at the talk yesterday, which is now being, since we're broadcasting this several weeks later, it's a while from now, but what happened? How was your experience, and what did you feel like?
It was amazing because, first of all, it was wonderful because a lot of people did show up, and everybody listened intently. So when you're standing up in front of a crowd, if people are looking around or falling asleep, that's not a good sign. That didn't happen, so I was happy. The amazing thing for me was that people stood up and shared experiences. Some of them I don't think had ever talked about them before openly in front of anyone, and they felt free to stand up and share those experiences in front of that group. And that just actually, the power that you can get from just identifying your wounding is incredible power, and it helps you to move forward, I think, and being able to share it, getting rid of some of that shame as well. I saw that happening.
But having other people also. So you talk for like a half an hour, actually, I think 30 or 40 minutes.
Yep.
Great talk, by the way. But one of the things that was moving for you wasn't just hearing your own voice, but people actually moved by your words to actually change themselves.
Right.
And they actually got up in front and they said, I swear I had to control myself from crying probably three different times. There was some stories that just rocked me.
Me too.
You know,
yeah.
Like the hand there's, you know, this terrible thing about this terrible thing that happened to this individual, and then the healing that happened afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. And even just hearing from people who have experienced being around children who obviously their mother, and last night in that case was the mother, had severe mental illness, and they didn't know what to do about that. And just hearing the description of one woman described an infant or a toddler on the mother's lap and the painful look on the child's face, that almost made me cry because I could totally understand. I totally got what that looked like because I guess I understood what that felt like. So that was amazing as well. And to be able to say from my learned experience how to deal with that as an outsider or as somebody who just feels helpless. And I have a chapter in the book called Lifelines, or a couple chapters, where I talk about what you can do, how you can be a lifeline for children like that, validating them, changing what the script in their head, which is that they're a bad person, they're not worthy, they're not lovable, they've been abandoned. Changing that script, for me, I think, was a big part of my way forward. I had a lot of lifelines around me. They had no idea they were my lifelines, no idea. But I cobbled together enough support, I think, that I was able to, as an adult, start to change that script.
Well, and I think what was really interesting was not only hearing that kind of notion of, here's my experience, and it's just allowing yourself to be witnessed, that I'm not alone, that we are not alone, and none of us are alone, and none of us come in this world alone or get out alone.
Yeah.
We survive by being together and to making a difference together. And, but it's not enough just to have a voice and to say what's happened, but to do something, to reach out, to have an action connect it with that experience. So you concretize it, you make it real. It gives you power and control over that experience to then transform it into something that's productive. So I always talk about there's this great movement addressing PTSD and other traumatic issues where it's not going around to the past and getting stuck in, here's my experience, here's my experience, here's my experience, but taking that experience, whatever, however horrible it was, and then doing something with it to make it productive. Mm. And I talk about my trauma that I had and being able to utilize it in a way to make it productive. And I think that's the courage that I encourage everybody to listen to, courage to encourage everybody to listen to take back your power, take back your control, and do something with your traumas. Be that lifeline, not only to somebody else, which heals you, but to be that lifeline to yourself. It's an interesting thing when we think about the notion of quantum physics, where we can go, time is kind of a relative construct. And we could essentially go back in time, you know, rescue that child, be our lifeline to ourselves, and pull that child forward into the future and say, it's going to be okay. Yeah. I can hug you even if nobody else can. And then also to be able to look in the future and go, this is the world we want to create in the future, and bring it back to the present. And so we can actually time travel. Time travel actually exists.
Yep.
And to do something, just like parallel worlds exist, and it's called the multiverse, and different and possibilities of our world could have been in a certain place. And in essence, though, we could reach across different universes and go, that's what could have been, should have been, would have been, doesn't matter, but this is what I want to do with it now. So I'm going to reach across to another possibility and make that real for me today.
Yep. Two other things happened last night that I want to make sure that I cover off on. One was that there were two women there who are gorgeous, who had no idea that childhoods like mine were around, because they had a really good childhood. And part of the reason I wrote the book was to raise awareness that, in fact, people walking around are the walking wounded, and they might have behaviors or quirks about them that have to do with that wounding, and to be aware of that, of that history, and to be able to deal, I suppose, with that wounding. And it was for me, it was very heartening to see. I mean, they both teared up, and that was kind of cool, in a nice way. And just the fact that they understood that someone like me could come out of a childhood like that, that was really, to me, that was really cool. And I felt really validated, and partly why I wrote the book, you know, was to raise awareness so people understand that when you see Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, and people go, oh, yeah, oh, she's got issues. She gets in the car with three kids. What's happening at home? Like, I don't know if people think about that. I don't think they do, unless you've been through the experience or you're a therapist. You don't think about it.
Yeah.
But those kids are being collaterally damaged no matter what's happening at home. I met with a group a couple weeks ago, and one of the women there has, I would say, a severe mental illness. And she said to me, oh, my child's fine. He's fine. And I said, oh, that's great, you know. And she said, yeah, when I have flare-ups, when I have episodes, he just takes care of me. And I said, well, how old is your child? She said, 4.
Oh, my God.
And I just wanted to cry. Oh, but, of course, I didn't say anything. But I don't think people understand the impact on a child, because the child is helpless and has no power. Till you're emancipated, you don't have much power in your household.
Well, the brain doesn't stop developing into your mid-20s anyways, and then it still doesn't stop developing because of neuroplasticity, that the brain can always, no matter what's happened to any of us, can always change. But I think, you know, it's moving past that notion of the child's codependency and how the mother is destroying that child's life, you know, until the child can reclaim themselves. And how much, you didn't just have a bad mother. You had as severe as you could possibly have experience. And it sounded like some other people have as well. But I think what was also incredibly moving was this, and I love how you say gorgeous, by the way, because it's not just physical beauty. No. It's, how would you say it?
Light from inside.
Exactly.
Just shining out. That's,
exactly.
That's what I mean by gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly.
And on the outside too, but you can see it from the inside.
But that's what I think people really need to recognize about our partners and about our people in this life, that we're all gorgeous.
We are.
Okay. So, but one of the gorgeous women from last night, the twins, when she's going, I had a wonderful childhood. The most perfect childhood you can imagine.
She described her mother as an angel, and I love that.
And it's like, and she's in tears, and we're all in tears, watching her in tears, being with her in tears, because she gets to share in your experience and in the experience of others to make her life even richer and fuller, to make a difference in other people's lives. So it's not just, oh, I had a bad experience and I could relate to somebody with a bad experience.
Right, exactly.
I
love that. That was great last night.
Is that how you would say it?
Yeah, that's well said. Exactly.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
So anyways, so we're going to go into a few more questions.
Yeah, and I had just one more thing I wanted to share about last night before I forget. And that was that there were, I don't know if there was any men that came forward, but there was.
Yeah.
But there was.
No, there's a couple men with very powerful stories.
Yeah. But it was interesting to me to feel the isolation of, there was two women in particular and one man in particular that had a very similar childhood to me. And it was interesting to me that all three of them, the two women for sure, said that they never knew anybody else had an experience like theirs.
Mm.
And there's a part of my book where I talk about my sister being taken away to the mental hospital.
Yeah.
And how I was...
Which was not the same as mental hospitals today.
Right. And I used a standalone line, which was that I was irretrievably broken. And the comment that one of the women had was so interesting. And she said, I look at you now, I don't see that.
Mm.
Do you still feel that? And I said, I mean, as honestly as I could, yes.
And she had a lot of trepidation to even say that.
She did.
She was like, you know, I'm sorry to ask you, can I ask you a really hard question?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, I don't mind the hard questions.
No. Yeah. But that, I mean, it was difficult for her.
Yeah. And so my response to her, and I mulled it over and I'm comfortable with that response, was that night something did break inside of me, for sure. I mean, I can't describe it. It physically felt like it was happening, and I could feel it happening. And I am the person I am today because of that experience, but I also feel like deep inside of myself, there's a sadness from that night that's never gone away. And so I describe myself as a happy, sad person. That's the best way I can think of how to describe that.
And so, as a therapist, I hear that and go, you don't have to be sad anymore. You don't have to hold on and hold on to that sadness. It's not that. It's like when I talk to people about forgiveness, it's not about forgiving somebody else. It's about forgiving ourselves for allowing ourselves to be hurt, even when we couldn't control, you know, you were a child.
Yeah.
There, it's not that you need to forgive your mother. Your mother was, you know, the intruder.
Yeah. I call her mental illness the intruder.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it stole her.
Yeah.
And it's not about forgiving her or forgiving what had happened, but it's almost forgiving that sadness, that pain that we cause ourselves and going, I'm ready to let that go. I don't need that badge anymore. I'm free.
I think what happened that night, though, Scott, was that my reality, so I was 17, my hopefulness and my reality became cemented in. Like, this is the way it is.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is.
There's no more illusions. This is
no,
it.
No, this is as painful as it's going to be for me. And it was. I mean, that was a really, I described being in a place by myself, no rescue coming. Nobody even knew I was there. And it was that. I think for a human being to realize that there's such a place, if that sounds a bit weird, but to know that there is such a place inside of yourself, that was the sadness. To recognize that, in fact, there is that deep, dark place, which I had no, I mean, I guess I never thought there was such a place inside of ourselves. That was the sadness that I think I still carry, that I know it's there. That can be that low. Yeah.
By the way, you're listening to Carrie U 100.1 on your FM dial. Today we're talking to Kate Grace about her wonderful book, Collateral Damage. But it's really fascinating, sort of following up on the lecture at the library, the talk at the library that everybody could listen to. And I really think it's fascinating how that came off and what was experienced by everybody. And you're describing, though, just a moment ago about that notion of being broken, irretrievably broken. And yes, the illusion of happiness, the illusion of possibility was taken from you. But I still think that could be reclaimed. I still think that could be healed.
You're such an optimist. I'm kidding.
I've seen it. You know, that's my, you know, how could I not be? Yeah.
I mean, I feel joyful and happy. I don't want people to think, or to you to think, that I walk around feeling sad.
No.
It was a recognition, I suppose, in the darkness of humankind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there, but, you know, I think sometimes it's important for us to notice and be part of the extremes, the bipolar existence that we live in. You know, Hitler did exist. Terrible things are happening. Politicians who are terrible people are doing terrible things and saying terrible things and doing, you know, there's things all around us at times that are toxic and destructive. But there's also a sweet spot in between, between the black and the white, between the right and the wrong, between the all or the nothings, where there's a way to live, and a way to live with the toxic. And I was going to bring this up for a moment. It's a little bit of a diversion, but I listened to this wonderful TED Talk as I was biking in this morning on the babushkas of the Ukraine at Chernobyl. The babushka is the grandmothers. Yep. And how all these towns around the Chernobyl were taken away, and people were told they're all radiated and you can't come back again. Well, a number of these women came back to the town. The men died because they had been drinking and smoking and not taking care of themselves. The women survived. What was amazing is this small town of, I think, literally 8 women, you know, not only survived in this toxic, destructive environment, but survived 30 years and survive longer than the people that were taken that left and never came back. On average, 10 years longer almost than some of the women that went to Kiev and stayed in an apartment building and never had community or family or their gardens or their family. So even in this toxic environment, they live longer because, I don't know, what do we say? Their spirit? They took that sadness, that toxicity of that sadness and that pain that you went through, and we all have gone through that. All of us have been touched by that malady.
Yep.
Every single one of us. And it's not the same, and it doesn't ever have to be the same. That's unique. It's our touchstone. But to take that and do something with it, and to take even that toxic element and say, we could live, and we could share and grow even in that experience.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't know why they lived longer.
Well, again, you know, it's a powerful thought to think, you know, that our minds really are stronger than our bodies. Not beyond limits, but, you know, the vehicle is still the vehicle. If I don't put gas in the car, it's still not going anywhere, no matter how much I think I want it to go anywhere.
Yeah, true.
But the mind and the body really are connected, and the spirit is there. And utilizing it in a way to make a difference.
And some of my way forward was, you know, I started practicing yoga. I ended up having a lot of physical health problems and autoimmune problems, which I don't know if you've heard of the movie Paper Tigers. It's a documentary.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned
it before. I did mention that before. Yeah,
it's lovely.
It had to do with adverse childhood experiences, and the more you have on a scale of 1 to 10, the more chance you're going to have health problems. And for me, that was, and for my family, actually, my siblings, it's been totally true. So,
But it's also the stress, and you weren't eating healthy. You were malnourished. You weren't healthy. I mean, people weren't taking care of you.
No, it's true.
So it takes rehealing. But the good thing to remember is that, you know, every cell in our body is replaced every 7 years. But not only that, but every single atom is replaced, you know, in a very short time, in a matter of 6 weeks, months. I mean, it's like when people talk about, I got a broken leg, you know, it's healing.
Yeah.
You know, anyways. All right. We were going to ask a couple questions because now we only have 5 minutes left.
Okay. Oh,
okay.
We always run out of time. Okay.
Well, it's so fun to talk.
Okay. I'm going to answer this question. How did you, and it's, I'm not sure I have an answer in my head.
So this is from Danielle and Bella, who lovely wrote out some questions for you that we didn't get to ask the other night.
I'll ask this one. Do you still sometimes feel like you need your parents' approval or the approval of others around you? That, I think, strikes at the heart of that feeling that I grew up with of being unworthy, never good enough, and unlovable. It's a great question because it shows that they understood exactly what was happening to me. And I guess my answer to it is not an easy one. The answer is yes. I do sometimes feel that way. I talk in the book about going to meet my mother at the very end. I did like a postscript, and she doesn't know I wrote this book, but I talk about going to meet her to have breakfast with her because I felt like I didn't want my dad had passed away, and I didn't want my mother to pass away not thinking that I somehow hated her.
But you're still thinking about her. You're still stuck in her.
So, I was getting ready to go to meet her, and I'm changing my clothes, and women out there, you'll understand, what should I wear? I don't know what to, you know, I was rehearsing in my head what I was going to say, and I'm driving along, and I pulled the car over because I realized, like, this is still about me trying to get her to love me. It was ridiculous when I think about it now that I was, the intention changed so rapidly from what I was starting out my intention to what happened as I was driving in. So I did give thanks to the universe that I actually got squared away before I met with her. I still seek out approval of not just my parents. And, you know, my dad and I actually, we healed. We were fine. We had a lot. We still kept rehealing. Like, the old wounds kept surfacing, but we would always work through them. I think we were both determined to do so. In many ways, he was my best friend. And it was really hard when he passed away. But it was nice for me to actually meet up with my mom and tell her that I forgave her, that I, you know, I wished her no ill will.
But she didn't get it.
No, she didn't get it at all.
But the thing is, that's what I was saying about the forgiveness. Forgiveness is not ultimately for the other.
Right.
It's like you go to a funeral, not for the person who has passed, but for the living that are still in pain.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think when I have a difficult boss, which I've had in my life, I've had controlling sort of, and in Australia, I'm going to say it's a bit sexist there. I've struggled with that, where I go right back into that space of wanting to, of feeling like I'm not adequate, feeling like I'm not doing a good enough job. And somehow the interplay there of the criticism went rebounding me back into the space of wanting to please my mom. I know it sounds funny, but
it just goes
right back to that. And I had to actually, with one of my bosses in particular, I had to actually just be really fierce with myself and say, no, you're doing a great job. So I guess the answer is, I think it's something that I will always struggle with. And for me, the trick is identifying when that's happening and then doing something about it. For me, identifying the problem is half solving it, to be honest. Once I realize that's what's happening, and when it starts to happen, I feel terrible about myself. I feel completely inadequate. Like I said, I rebound back into that space and think, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. And that's what I hear in my head. Recognizing that, in fact, I am good enough and he's just being a jerk. It's very empowering.
Stop making it about the other.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what codependency is. You make it about the other.
Yeah.
And you instead, no, you bring back that power and control back to you. You make it about you and what you're doing. And again, just having that awareness is the action itself.
Yeah.
So when I talk about having understanding and experience and then doing something, that doing something could simply be acknowledging what's there and what's not. And that action of self-awareness and being strong enough to be who you need to be.
Yep.
That's it.
And knowing I'm good enough the way I am, you know?
Yeah.
And with him, I mean, with the times that I've had to do that, I've just had to actually set up boundaries and be and sit down and talk to them and say, this is the scoop. And
that's right.
And it's worked. So, you know.
And the boundaries, again, that comes from you. Again, the power comes from you. Yep. It's not about the other. And that's the tricky thing about all of our lives. We talked about none of us come in the world alone, leave alone, or can exist alone, except we always make it then about the other person is because we live in that world. And it's this weird balance of like, it's about the other, but no, it's really about myself.
Yep.
But if I'm only about myself, who am I?
Yeah.
And if not, now when? Sorry to quote Herschel there for a second, but
good quote.
Yeah. So, you know, it really becomes an interesting dynamic. So anything else you want to say about this in our final minute here?
No, I'm so appreciative of you guys for letting me come and talk to you and for being on the radio with you, Scott. I think you're awesome. And I do want to say that I think you do a really good job of empowering people. I saw it in person last night. I've heard it on the radio now in our interviews. And I think that's really, I mean, I think hearing your voice sometimes might be the lifeline people need who are not coming to the talks or whatever. But yeah. You are a lifeline in your own right. So I think you should acknowledge that. I want to acknowledge that.
Well, thank you.
I hope you're proud of that. So it's an awesome thing. Yeah.
And I, as they say, pass that forward to somebody else to now take that energy of being a lifeline to somebody else today, even if that somebody else is yourself. Even if it, you know, to not run from the fear. Mm-hmm. We don't run anymore. We don't need to run. The monster isn't in the room anymore. And even if the monster is still in the room and you're a child or you're trapped in a bad situation with somebody, you become the king and queen to yourself. You become that knight in shining armor to yourself and go, now's the time to move forward. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you, Scott.
You're awesome. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.